This week's episode is sponsored by Amico & Co, the full-service refit shipyard at the heart of the Med, with large yacht facilities, in-house departments, and berthing at its waterfront marina. To find out more, visit amicoshipyard.com. For this special episode of Boat Briefing, we turn to the brilliant lineup of speakers at Boat International's recent Explore Yacht Summit in Monaco. When the Rev Ocean project was first announced back in 2017, it was big news. The brainchild of the Norwegian businessman Kjell Inge Rock, this would be the world's largest research and expedition vessel. The list of features included radical scientific facilities and design by Espen Oino and H2 Yacht Design. After a two-year hiatus in the build to resolve some construction issues, the team behind the project announced last year that it had restarted in earnest and is due for delivery in 2026. Rev Ocean's CEO Nina Jensen joined us at the Explore Yacht Summit to tell us more about the revived project, including some exclusive updates.
It's a great pleasure to be here and to talk about a pretty exciting project that we're working on, the Rev Ocean. But to begin, it's of course important to start with the why. Why are we doing this? And of course, the sole reason is to make some positive changes for the ocean, because actually nothing is more important than the ocean. And it's probably not surprising that a marine biologist would say that, but actually all life on this planet originated in the ocean. And as my professor in fisheries biology at the University of James Cook used to say, we humans are nothing but a poorly evolved fish. And at some stage, we all crawled out of the ocean and established life on land. But all life on this planet depends on the ocean. And of course, I think also that's why we are constantly drawn to the ocean as humans, and ultimately why we desperately need to protect it. So the ocean pretty much provides us with everything that we need to have a good life. It provides us with more than 50% of the oxygen that we breathe. It regulates our climate and actually stores more than 20 times more carbon than what is stored on land. So when people are really concerned about protecting the rainforest, what they ultimately should be concerned about is protecting the ocean. And it's also an essential food source. More than 1 billion people across the planet depends on protein from the ocean, and increasingly so as land-based food production is failing. But despite its importance, we are treating the ocean as a massive waste dump. And I don't want to be negative, Monty, but it's also a bit of about being realistic about what is actually happening. So in our lifetime, we have fundamentally changed the future of our planet by reducing life in the ocean by more than 40%. And unfortunately, the situation is escalating, mainly due to three main threats: plastic pollution, overfishing, and climate change. There is now not a single part of this planet that is not touched by plastic pollution. We find plastic in the deepest trenches of the Mariana Trench, down to 11,000 meters. We find it in the inner reaches of the Arctic sea ice. The plastic is raining down on us. It is in your coffee and in your drinking water. It is now also in our lungs and in our brains. This is a massive man-made experience that we're all part of and that we need to reverse. Then there's unsustainable fishing. Even though there are success stories like the bluefin tuna, which I've been proud to be working on for a number of years, but the reality is that more than 93% of global fish stocks are pushed to the brink or overfished at the present. We can reverse it. We just need to manage our fisheries better. And then finally, of course, the overarching threat of climate change, where the ocean is every month now breaking new records in terms of heat, and the implications this, of course, has for coral reefs, fish, and all marine life. So ultimately, in RevOcean, we believe that knowledge is the key to saving life in the ocean. And despite its importance, we know surprisingly little about the ocean. So does anyone in the audience know how many species are estimated to live in the ocean? Close to 2 million species are expected to be found in the ocean. But how many have currently been described by science? Around 240,000 species have to date been described. This means that more than 1.8 million, and probably more, are just waiting to be found and discovered. And that's, of course, part of what we hope to be doing in RevOcean. So less than 10% of the ocean has been explored. So if you're looking for new areas to go, areas to explore where no one has been before, the ocean provides that exact opportunity. It also means that there is 90% of ocean waiting to be explored, discovered, and of course, solutions to major world problems to be found. And we cannot, of course, protect what we don't understand. Without the proper knowledge, you cannot manage fisheries well, you cannot plan industrial activities well, and you certainly cannot restore and repair the damages that we've done. So, finding that knowledge is the key to the establishment of the RevOcean initiative. And this is probably quite an unusual partnership in many ways. Kjell Inge Røkke is a Norwegian businessman, an industry builder, a billionaire, and a capitalist. And myself, a long-term, lifelong environmental activist, and having spent more than 15 years of my life before joining RevOcean in World Wildlife Fund. But I actually think that these unusual alliances are what is needed to really make an impact at the end of the day. If there is something that I've realized after spending a whole life trying to improve the state of our environment, is that environmental activists simply will not be able to fix the problems of our world or the ocean alone. We really need to bring all the different sides of the table together, and in particularly, of course, bringing industry, the capitalists, and the environmentalists together to solve it. So we've teamed up to hopefully contribute in part to creating one healthy ocean. And to do that, we are building a pretty unique vessel, actually the world's largest research and expedition vessel, even larger than originally planned, now due to be 194 meters in length, and hopefully not longer. And the whole ambition is to use this vessel as a platform to engage the most talented and brilliant people from all over the world to find solutions to the major problems that the ocean is facing. So we will invite scientists, explorers, artists, innovators, tech experts, anyone that knows something about the ocean or wants to know something about the ocean, but ultimately really wants to improve the state of the ocean, will be invited to join us on our mission. So we have extensive areas, both for scientific research and, of course, for guests to come on board. When we started the initiative, we actually invited the entire scientific community in Norway to give input into what such a vessel should have in terms of scientific equipment. And then we got a long wish list from these scientists, and we packed the entire list into the vessel. So it's pretty much jam-packed with the most state-of-the-art scientific equipment in the world. And two-thirds of the space on board the vessel is dedicated exactly to science and exploration. And we, of course, want to combine this science and exploration with opportunity for charter. And ultimately, at the end of the day, it's all about creating solutions. So our approach is probably a little bit different. We will invite people to join us with no cost involved. So scientists and innovators from all over the world will be invited to join our mission for free on board the vessel. Many have spoken about this in the previous talks, but for us, it's also really, really important to engage the younger audiences. Hopefully, young and emerging scientists and innovators will be much brighter and better at solving the problems of the ocean than we have been up until now. And we want to engage really the leading experts from all over the world. We don't think that it takes only marine biologists or ocean activists to improve the state of the ocean. We really need people from all types of backgrounds, geographies, thinking, mindsets, and education to solve these problems, because the problems that we're facing today will not necessarily be solved by very traditional mindsets. So collaboration is key for us, and we also want to be using the vessel to champion ocean innovation and solutions. We believe that many of the solutions to the problems that we're facing today already exist, but they may not be perfected or shared widely enough. So we want to use the vessel as a platform for bringing all of these brilliant people together to really make sure that the solution can be improved, that they can reach new markets, that they can be scaled, that they can receive the funding that they need, and of course be implemented on the ground to really have a positive impact. So the vessel can at any given point hold up to 106 people. So to really maximize on our, call it presence or opportunity to reach people, we will also be using advanced gaming technology, especially to engage the younger audiences, but to be able to real-time share what we're doing on board the vessel. What are we doing? What type of research is ongoing? Where are we? Who have we brought on board? You can meet the scientist, ideally real time, ask your questions. We'll share the environmental parameters of our footprint and, of course, share the results that we are hopefully creating. So many of you are probably curious about the delay and what has been happening since our last update. So as you're aware, we've run into some construction challenges. And as our owner says, if it was easy, it would have already been done. And thankfully, with the red star moment that you shared in your presentation, Monty, thankfully he took the optimist route and thought that it still can be done. And I think that's the passion that resonates throughout the entire project. It's to never give up and to always find solutions to wicked problems. Actually, Mr. Rucker was advised by pretty much everyone that he knows that he should bail on the project when we ran into difficulties. But he is not the type of person who will give up, and thankfully so, for the project, but also ultimately for the ocean. We really need people with the ability to stick it through, even through difficult times. So what we've done with the construction challenges is that we've extended the vessel by 12 meters, and we've also redesigned and rebuilt top of the superstructure in aluminium. And what we've done with the extension is, of course, to extend the capabilities of the vessel. So this has meant that we now have more hangar space than before. So we actually have now a dedicated submarine hangar and also a dedicated CTD hangar, which really makes life easier for scientists and for those operating the vessel on board. We've also added 3D printing and robotics lab, which is also something that both the people operating the vessel but the scientists have requested as a great opportunity to develop things as we are on the go, both for the vessel as such, but also for the different innovations and technologies that we will be testing en route. We've also then been able to add a state-of-the-art media studio where we hope to be doing live streamings, documentary filmmaking, and recording podcasts, to say a few things. We've added additional container storage for the scientists. A lot of the science that will be going on will require very specialized equipment that we don't necessarily will have at all times. So this allows scientists to always bring the latest and the best equipment on board the vessel. We also have storage for new tenders, really extending the reach and capabilities of the vessel, whether it's to go into the Arctic sea ice or to have multiple projects on at the same time to go to remote locations and different islands. And of course, increased fuel capacity and overall improved functionality of the vessel. So the scientific hangar is the heart of the vessel, shown here. In the middle of it, we have a moon pool where we will be deploying both the sub and the ROV, which are two of the pieces of equipment most highly sought after by the scientists. But we also have capabilities to launch these pieces of equipment over the side of the vessel. But this is really a pretty cool feature of the vessel. And as I said, we have pretty much every piece of science equipment that the science community has requested. So just to name a few, we have a submarine that can go down to 2,300 meters with three people on board, with advanced sampling equipment and camera gear so that we can also make spectacular documentaries, hopefully. We have an ROV that can go down to 6,000 meters with the same type of sampling equipment and camera gear. And we also have, I'm assuming that we are the only yacht with its own trawl arrangement. It's probably not the most common feature on yachts, but we have a pelagic trawl that actually also has a vacuum pump in the middle of it so that we can pump the samples directly into the laboratories on board. And we're exploring whether we can also use face recognition technology in the trawl to only get the samples that we need to ease the job for the scientists, but also improve the sampling protocols for the ocean. And we have a whole range of other equipment, CTDs, multi-beams, sonars, and the works. We also have 9 scientific labs. We have 2 helidecks, 1 helicopter. We have a media room I mentioned, but we also have an expedition lounge, and we have a ROV control room where we hope to be inviting the guests on board as well to really take part in the exciting science missions that we're on. To be able to show what we're doing en route, we've also built a 35-seat auditorium where we can showcase documentaries, but also real-time show footage from the ROV and the sub once they're down in expeditions. And of course, this is hopefully also a great way to really engage people in improving the understanding and passion for the ocean. We have multiple meeting rooms and classrooms on board, again, to engage in particular the younger generation. And when we are in ports, we will be inviting local communities to come on board, of course, to have meetings with us, but also to engage in the onboard science activities. And the vessel is also fitted with quite unique guest areas, both for mingling, for dining, and for ultimately brainstorming on powerful solutions. Espen and Andrea, part of the design team, are here, of course. And as Espen says, change is the only constant. And that's definitely true for this project. So I won't be sharing additional renders at this stage because they will probably still change by the time the vessel is ready. But no doubt it will be quite extraordinary. Finally, we want to use all parts of the vessel to create enthusiasm for the ocean. So we also have quite an extensive art program on board. We've been working with approximately 80 Norwegian up-and-coming artists, and through that bought around 180 art pieces specifically designed or purchased for the particular area where they will be on the vessel as conversation starters, but also to illustrate some of the problems that the ocean is facing. So it's anything from oil paintings, sound installations, video installations. And this in particular from one of the staircases will be filled with dramatic images from the kelp forest. And in the glass elevator that will also be in the center of the vessel, we hope to do a musical journey from the bottom of the seafloor up to the sea surface with a Norwegian saxophone player. So I think we've pretty much thought of everything in terms of the vessel. We, of course, would welcome your contributions and joining us on the mission to finding solutions to these three problems in particular. We will definitely not be able to solve the problems of the ocean alone. We really need everyone to pitch in, and it takes, you know, small actions every single day to have a positive impact. But hopefully many of you in the room will be keen to join us to ultimately create one healthy ocean. Thank you. And then we also have a bit of time for questions. Anyone?
Hello, Nina. Been looking to have a conversation with you for at least 3 years, I think. So first question, I have two. But the first question, what actually is your day job? What do you actually do? The second question is, can we connect around the IUCN Important Marine Mammal Area Program that myself and my colleagues are working on presently? But we could talk about that a bit later. If anyone is listening and would like to know, I'm here, happy to talk about it.
Perfect. And glad we're finally able to connect. So to your second question, yes, let's discuss how we can work on that in particular. And to your first question, my day job is this, but no day is equal to the previous day or the following day. I never really know what to expect. It's a mix of everything, keeping a team engaged, making sure that the build process goes according to plan, which it never does, and of course planning for future operations. That means, where do we go? What do we do? Who do we bring? How can we have a biggest possible impact? It's pretty exciting stuff, I must say.
Thank you. As you said, Espen quoted that the only constant in life is change. How, with a vessel which has had such a long development plan and will have a long life in service, have you allowed for upgrades and changes of technology from propulsion and systems on board to be able to extend the life of the vessel with expanding technologies?
Mm. Good question. And of course, once the project is finished, it will be approximately 10 years since the initial conversations. So a long time span. Initially, we did explore whether it could be fully electric. Of course, technology isn't really ready for that yet. So we have a hybrid propulsion at the moment with large battery packs on board. And hopefully, once technology is more advanced, we'll be able to upgrade it accordingly. We are aiming to reduce our environmental footprint as much as possible, aiming at more sustainable fuels, reducing our energy consumption. We have energy recovery systems on board, trying to eliminate plastics to zero and so forth. So a lot of things to be focusing on.
How many people ashore and afloat do you expect the Rev Ocean project to employ or engage?
Ooh, good
and
question.
And also, what are the roles you're looking to fill now?
Good question. Now we are 23 land-based and also working on build supervision. We will quite dramatically increase in size over the next couple of years, probably looking at close to 100 employees. And then we'll be working with also crewing companies, of course, to be operating the vessel. This number is constantly in flux like everything else. It depends on where we go and what we decide to do. But we are recruiting a few positions at the moment. We are soon opening up recruitment for a new captain. as one example. And then next year, we'll be looking for a solutions director, amongst other things. But multiple jobs will be coming online. So if you're interested, then watch us in social media and on LinkedIn, where all posts will be posted. It depends on what mode we'll be in. So in science mode, we're probably aiming at 60-odd scientists to join, and then 35 crew. And then when we are in yacht mode, chartering the vessel out, the number will be reversed.
Mika of Icon Yachts. The extent of the project is mind-blowing. So congratulations for being part of this. I think it's utopian, even, and we all understand what it takes. Now, what are the plans for ownership in combination with all the programs? Will it be used by the owner and family and friends gathering scientists and all you have described, or can we charter the vessel, etc.?
The vessel will be open to charter 1/3 of the time, and the vessel will also be used by the owner. But when the owner uses it, he will also pay the rates of using it. So the majority of the time, it will be used for science and expeditions. The owner may also be joining some of these expeditions as such. Ownership is Norwegian. Mr. Røkke is paying for both the entire construction and the operation of the vessel, which is not cheap, of course, when you're offering people to come on board for free. So we will be, as I said, chartering it out part of the time to have a bit of cost recovery and to contribute to the important scientific programs that we'll be embarking on.
Could you give us a bit more details about what the process is on how you decide which scientific missions you're carrying out, and maybe even a preview of something you already have planned?
Thank you for that question. Yeah, so it has to have two very specific things, or we have two requirements, three actually. It has to be solutions focused. It has to openly share data. And 30, it has to be multidisciplinary, bringing together teams across disciplines and across geographies, and always having a local element, bringing in the local communities into the projects. We have an independent scientific committee comprised of 11 leading experts from all over the world, both in our three thematic science areas, plastics, overfishing and climate change, but also experts in innovation and blue finance. And they will contribute to selecting the most state-of-the-art research projects that we will be embarking on. So we'll have an open call for proposals announced on our website so that everyone and anyone can apply. But in the first year of operation, which will be in 2027, it will be by invitation only. Because, of course, we know that things can and will go wrong. So in the first year of operations, it's best to be among friends and family. But there will definitely be invitations to join our science missions going forward from 2027 for the entire global scientific community.
Nina, thank you. Ladies and gents, please thank Nina Jensen.
Thank you for listening to this week's Boat Briefing, which was mixed and produced by Naomi Wilson and is a production of Boat International Media. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and we'll see you next week.